Thank you for joining us on this edition of Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane here with your host, psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson and Ryan Dobson. Today we're going to take a look at the sanctity of human life issue as it relates to the subject of slavery in our world's history. It's a terribly difficult subject to address, but we really want to honor the memory of one very courageous man, Doctor.
And what an impact he had on his era and even down to this very day. One historian described the accomplishments of William Wilberforce as a turning event in the history of the world, and I truly believe that it was. Yet many people have forgotten this man. They don't even know his name, and I don't think school children are taught about him, but we cannot allow his name to just fade into history.
Well, they can become familiar with his name through a movie which depicted his life and his fight to abolish the slave trade in Britain. It's called Amazing Grace. It was released in 2007, and it's now available on DVD.
Well, our listeners may recall that we dedicated the month of January of this year to the sanctity of human life. But that is a topic that we will address off and on throughout the year because it's that important. And it's why we're going to remember the heroism of William Wilberforce today and recall his dedication to the worth and dignity of every human life. His story is so inspirational, and what we're going to hear is a previous interview with my friend Charlie Colchester from the United Kingdom, who speaks brilliantly on this subject. Charlie and I have known each other for many years, going back to the late 1980s, and he has just done so many things in the UK and around the world to defend and support the things that we believe here at Family Talk, including the sanctity of human life.
Mr. Colchester is a graduate of Oxford University with a bachelor's degree in history and French. He founded Christian Action Research and Education, which is the UK's leading Christian policy and social justice organization. Currently, he works as president of the Office of International Diplomacy, which he founded in 1996. He and his wife, Serena, live in London with their six children.
Ryan, I've always enjoyed talking to this man. Whenever we go to the UK, it's my goal to get some time with him because he is just brilliant. And that's especially why I enjoyed the conversation with Charlie Colchester about William Wilberforce, which was recorded, and we're going to hear it today.
All right, let's get right to it. For you parents out there, we may get into some graphic content, so be aware of that if you have small children. Here now is Dr. Dobson's interview with Mr. Charlie Colchester.
Charlie, thanks for being with us. We appreciate your being here. And we're going to be talking about William Wilberforce and all the work that he did to get rid of slavery. That's something that resonates with your heart, doesn't it?
It certainly does, Dr. Dobson. I have to say, Wilberforce was a very young man when he went into Parliament. I was a relatively young man when I started CARE. And so I've always had a great affinity with him. But, of course, he was a giant of a political personality in history, and it's well worth us having this program, and I'm so honored to be able to do it with you.
Well, that story focuses again on slavery and what that was like between 1441, when it really began to gather momentum, and 1833, when it was eventually ended in the UK. It wasn't abolished in the United States until 1863. But what was it like when William Wilberforce was young? What did he see? What was the evil like? What was going on? If we could be transported back to the 1700s, what would we see there?
Can I quickly explain how it came about? Mm-hmm. The English people and the people of Europe, as you say, from the 15th century onwards, had gradually been developing a taste for sugar. And it became something of an addiction in Britain, as it still is to this day in most of the Western countries of the world. But in the 18th century, the consumption of sugar per person went up on a dramatic level, a dramatic scale. And therefore, it became something which people were very keen to produce as cheaply as they could. And they discovered that the climate of the new colonies in the West Indies were perfect for making sugarcane. And the thing about sugarcane is that it needs an intensive amount of labor in order to be able to make it a successful
especially in
crop.
Those days.
Especially in those days. It was the only way to do it was with intensive labor. And so the question was, the people who were interested in the sugar trade said to themselves, where can we get very cheap labor in order to do this? And the answer, sadly, came in the form of West African slaves. And so you then had this three-point trade where you had boats leaving, ships leaving Britain with cargo on board who'd go down to West Africa, where they would then pick up slaves who'd been brought down to the coast by slavers, black slavers from the interior, African slavers of their own people and adjoining tribes, would bring them down to the coast. And they were then packed into specially constructed slaving ships. And over a passage of between 16 and 30, sometimes 40 days, taken over to the other side of the
Describe
Atlantic.
Describe the holds of those ships. What was that like with all those human beings packed into that small space?
Dr. Dobson, you really wouldn't believe that human beings could do what they did to other human beings. They would take men, women, and children and pack them into a specially constructed deck, which was really literally no more deep than 18 inches. And in this little shelf, which was the whole size of the ship, they would then pack in literally hundreds of human beings, often in manacles and chains, and they were only allowed up on deck once a day when they would get a little bit of fresh air. But for the rest of the journey, they were just up against each other, packed like sardines into this disgusting space between the decks, where they unfortunately were in their own vomit, their own excrement, and they were brutally treated. It was well known for women slaves to be raped because they got a higher price on the other side of the Atlantic if they had a child on board, if they were pregnant. And it really defies all rational thought that any
human
beings do this kind of stuff.
I just don't understand that. And how could it be tolerated by a society that didn't have a stake in the outcome? I suppose the economic picture was such that everybody benefited a little bit.
It became a hugely significant part of the British economy, and indeed the Portuguese and Spanish one, and the Danish economy too. But the British by far and away were the largest slaving countries, and their sugar trade was an immensely successful part of the British colonial economy.
And the slaves had no rights whatsoever.
Absolutely
they could be
not.
Killed with impunity. There
they
was no such
often,
thing as murder.
No, they were considered without rights. They were just like objects. Literally, they were described as objects. The fact that they were human beings, had human feelings, had family relationships, was something which was just an impediment to their efficient use as labor for the production of sugar.
And I've read that up to 50% of the people that were packed into those ships died on the way over. 50%. So you got dead bodies down there, too.
Absolutely. In and amongst all these other poor people in these dreadful conditions. I mean, you know what traveling in a sailing ship is like in bad weather. It defies imagination to think what the conditions must have been like. And it's not surprising, therefore, that the young William Wilberforce, as he came into this newfound faith that he'd found as a result of the help of some great men of faith like Milner and Newton and John Wesley, he'd come into faith. He suddenly, as a young parliamentarian, decided that he needed to do something about this dreadful trade. And so he started on a campaign in 1778, which took him nearly 50 years to bring to a conclusion, as you said, Dr. Dobson, in 1833.
Before we leave the issue of the brutality of that era, there is one story that I have read about that I would like you to elaborate on briefly, having to do with the case of Zong, because it illustrates really just how little human life was revered or appreciated.
This was in the particular case of a ship where an outbreak of some disease had taken place on board, and they decided that the only way that they could save the ship was to throw the remaining slaves overboard, and therefore they just, without any compunction, took 100 slaves and threw them overboard.
There was no compassion whatsoever.
There was absolutely no compassion in terms of that decision. But what was so devastating was that the discussion which made the Zong case so famous was between two arguments over insurance indemnification. Who should get the insurance, or rather, who should pay the insurance claim? So that the whole idea that the human beings, the 100 human beings who'd been willfully killed, should be taken into consideration was of apparently no importance whatsoever.
Okay, into that world comes a young William Wilberforce, a young parliamentarian who saw this and said, this is evil, this is wrong, I will do what I can to fight it. In some ways, it's very similar to our situation here with regard to abortion, because that's a multi-million dollar industry. You know, the money that even our own Congress gives to Planned Parenthood is reminiscent of the evil that was expressed in that day, because other parliament members didn't want to touch that very lucrative business. And so here you've got Wilberforce standing up and saying, this is wrong. And he was vilified and attacked and discredited, marginalized. It sounds kind of familiar to what happens to pro-life people today.
Indeed it does. What was very moving was the way that the man John Wesley passed on the responsibility to William Wilberforce to do something about slavery. Here was John Wesley, who'd been the single greatest architect of the great awakening of Christianity in Britain in the early part of the 18th century. And in his dying letter, literally the last letter that John Wesley ever wrote, he says to the young William Wilberforce, who he's just learned has started in earnest to do something about the slave trade, go in the name of God, writes John Wesley, and in the power of his might, till even American slavery, the vilest that ever saw the sun, shall vanish away before it.
He had failure after failure after failure in Parliament.
Unbelievable, the numbers
of them. And the pressure on him was so great at one point he had a physical and emotional breakdown.
He did, completely collapsed.
And could hardly continue. He's a very small man, just a little over 5 feet tall.
That's
and,
right.
And here he was taking on this enormous enterprise. And how many years did it take him to see success?
Well, he first started in 1789, and he saw the trade, which is what we're celebrating the 200th anniversary of, in 1807. And then the abolition of the slave trade in 1833, 2 days before Wilberforce actually died.
So he lived to see slavery abolished.
In the British Empire.
In the British Empire.
What's so remarkable, Dr. Dobson, was that when you read his journals, right back in the 1780s, Wilberforce had this idea that he was doing what Wesley had asked him to do in terms of reforming the manners of the country, changing the moral climate of the culture, and that in order to do this, he needed to do something about the slave trade. And that's what John Wesley was confirming to him. And that's what he set himself the task, those two things, to abolish the slave trade and to reform manners in Britain. And it's arguable that by 1833, the nature of Christian living in Britain had profoundly changed from back in the 1770s.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think our listeners can see why I consider William Wilberforce to be one of the greatest men produced by Western civilization. And having that conviction, and it was not just slavery. He was involved in 70 different causes and organizations involving in the end of cruelty to animals. What other things?
He was involved in creating schools, the Church Missionary Society, the Bible Society. He was very concerned about the environment and many, many, many other causes to do with which came on and became the Factories Acts and the various other things later on in the century.
Someone said that good causes stuck to Wilberforce like pins to a magnet. That says it very well, doesn't it?
I mean, the thing about him, you know, was Dr. Dobson, he was an absolutely delightful person. People obviously warmed to him enormously. And the fun that they had as the Clapham sect, so-called, in South London, the tremendous friendships that he had with people, and the fun and the humor of his chaotic home was just such a fantastic picture of a very rich and rounded person.
We are remembering and celebrating Black History Month here in the United States. And the quote that you read from Wesley, as I recall, referred to the form of slavery here in the United States was the vilest example of it. And we didn't get rid of slavery in this country in 1833. It was not till the end of the Civil War in 1865. So we continued to profit from this wickedness and this evil in this country. And we've paid a price for it. And I think the African-American family is still wounded by the terrible things that happened back in its earlier history.
That's absolutely right. I mean, one of the most devastating things that one reads about in terms of the slave trade is that the slave owners particularly destroyed family units.
Oh. And therefore, isn't that awful?
Imagine that, dreadful.
Having a baby that you love. And then
having it taken away simply for some people want to use it for profit.
Put them up on a block and sell them, and off they go, and you never see them again. Husbands and wives separated.
Specifically.
This is just breathtaking to me. And I haven't seen it up close and personal. Wilberforce did, and it burned in his soul, didn't it?
It did.
You know, the effort to end slavery came out of the Great Awakening in the 1700s, and then it became to be translated into social policy. It's not enough to say, I'm a follower of Christ. We're required to go on to the defense of righteousness in every way that we can, including in the public arena, right?
That's absolutely right. The great John Stott calls this gospel responsibility, and it should be something which is burning a hole in every Christian's heart, is how can I apply the wonderful grace that I have received in my life and into the society around me? I believe that every single person, man, woman, and child, who has the love of Christ in their hearts, has a responsibility to work it out in action. Mm. Because Jesus finished the Sermon on the Mount with those wonderful words. You know, he'd made this fantastic statement of moral principles, and he finishes it up by saying, let your light so shine before men that they see your good works and glorify God. Mm. And I think that that's just a tremendous inspiration for us to realize that this gladdens the heart of God. You know, when he said, when I was hungry, did you visit me and feed me? When I was thirsty, did you give me something to drink? And that's what we need to think about.
Well, the parallel between that struggle and the struggle to preserve preborn life and the sanctity of life today is striking.
It's striking.
You look at those historical landmarks, you see that what they went through in those days, we're going through here today.
Miss Malcolm Muggeridge, the great British thinker and journalist, said to Lyndon Baring in the late 70s, "If William Wilberforce had been alive today, I am convinced that he would have addressed the great social evil of abortion." And the strange thing is, it's the blindness of people in the face of something which was so appalling like slavery.
Yeah,
and
how
yet
could
today,
they have
how
done
could
that?
They have done that
but
terrible thing?
But how can we today?
And we need to ask ourselves, will we in 50 years' time look back on today and say, how could we have been so blind as to accept this self-evident abuse of human rights, the destruction of a person in the womb?
You know, when we say, how could you have done this terrible thing in the 1800s, but how can we today do something so wicked?
And so there is a great awakening needed here. And I think the encouragement that this great film, Amazing Grace, and the story of Wilberforce gives us is an opportunity to address again God's call on each one of our lives to do something about these great social evils and to realize that when we do something about them, then it will have the effect of changing the nature of the culture around us, just as William Wilberforce's did in changing the culture of Britain at the beginning of the 19th century, such that by the 1840s, a silent revolution had taken place, as Herb Schlossberg put it in his brilliant book. The silent revolution took place, which completely transformed the nature of British society, and it was started by this one man being prepared to take a stand and see it through to the end.
Well, Charlie, I can see why you have been so fascinated with Wilberforce, what a man he was. Let's talk in our remaining moments about this film, Amazing Grace. Those words come out of John Newton's song, Amazing Grace. John Newton played a role in Wilberforce's life, didn't he?
He did indeed. As you may or may not know, John Newton had himself been a slaving captain, and then he was converted to Christianity and went on being a slaving captain for another 6 years, and a few years later wrote Amazing Grace while still not being prepared to take a stand against slavery. It was nearly 20 years after he'd been converted that John Newton began seriously to do something about his past in slavery. And he was interestingly given the opportunity of actually pastoring and discipling the young William Wilberforce, and played a very big part in taking William Wilberforce into a mature understanding of Christ.
Our thanks again to Mr. Charlie Colchester of the UK, as today he's introduced us to this amazing story of William Wilberforce and his tireless effort to abolish slavery. It gives all of us the hope that we, as Christians, have in being salt and light in our culture.
Well, William Wilberforce seemed and was almost larger than life, Luann. It is so important to remember this history, to know it and understand it, and to learn lessons from the past so that we can apply those lessons to our lives today. The principles that he taught are still highly relevant to today, particularly as we come to the end of Black History Month, which celebrates the contributions made by the African-American community throughout the past 400 years.
And it's so important, as you mentioned at the top of the program, Doctor, that future generations know William Wilberforce and this amazing contribution that he made to abolish slavery back in those days.
You know, Luann and Ryan, there is still a tremendous problem with slavery around the world. Mm-hmm. It is just incredible. There are more slaves today than there has been at any time in world history. And we're going to do a program on that. I'm not sure when, but it's coming up pretty soon.
Look for that at myfamilytalk.com. Of course, if you'd like to learn more about William Wilberforce, introduce your children to this amazing man, visit our website, myfamilytalk.com, where we have a link to his book, Real Christianity. It's important to know how instrumental this book was in Wilberforce's fight against the slave trade.
You know, Ryan and Lou Ann, of all the people down through history that I would like to have known personally, William Wilberforce is one that would have been a great inspiration to me if I could have talked to him. For one thing, he was vilified for what he did. Mm-hmm. Here he was fighting for the rights of man, not only Africans, but all human beings. And he was treated like dirt in his time. It gives me a little confidence and motivation when I get beat up that way. It really doesn't mean a whole lot when you are criticized as long as the Lord is pleased by what you're doing.
Again, the title of the book you mentioned, Lou Ann, is Real Christianity, and we'll have information on our website at myfamilytalk.com about that book. While you're there, you can request a complimentary copy of today's broadcast, or you can always give us a call at 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, and we'll see you next time.